Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Roz Rose the Pacific is brought to you by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Roz Rose with the amazing Roz Savage and Dr. Kiki, episode 62. Happy Earth Day. This is Roz Rose. We are following the progress of the amazing Roz Savage as she rose single-handedly across the Pacific Ocean. 2 years ago, she started in San Francisco and rode to Hawaii. A year ago, she started from Hawaii and rode to Kiribati. And this year, she left from Kiribati 5 days ago, an island in the South Pacific. 5 days ago, she started rowing, and now she's rowed some 450 miles, is about 200 miles as the crow flies from her origin. And she's attempting to reach somewhere in Australia, the end of her line. So hopefully we will be able to follow her over the next 3 months, all the way through the end of this amazing voyage. And I hope that you'll stay with us as we do this. But today is Earth Day. It's a portentous day for us to be doing Roz Rose, because Roz is out there rowing for the planet and the oceans. She's trying to bring a message of sustainability and the whole reduce, reuse, recycle, take care of the planet message to people out there by embarking on this adventure. So currently, she's out there somewhere and we are awaiting her call. She will be calling via satellite phone, probably in about 4 or 5 minutes. Hopefully the satellites will be aligned in such a way that we will be able to talk with her and see how she's doing, find out a little bit about the technology she's using on her ship this year, find out how she's doing almost a week into her trip, and also talk a little bit about her thoughts about sustainability and maybe some conversation about Earth Day. On the line also, I have Marcus Erickson of the Five Gyres Project, also of Algolita.org. Now, Marcus, let me bring you on the line, and can you tell us a bit about the Five Gyres Project and what exactly it is? I know you've been working on this for years.
Well, the Five Gyres Project, it grew out of the work of the Algolita Marine Research Foundation. Now, they've spent the last 10 years studying the impact of plastic waste on the North Pacific Gyre. Their founder, Captain Charles Moore, he's credited with having brought this issue to mainstream media. Well, that's one. The Pacific is one of five gyres in the world. Now, a gyre is a circular path of currents, and all the major oceans have them. We have just in the last 3 months went to the second gyre in the North Atlantic, then a third gyre in the Indian Ocean. And our attempt is to get to all five in the next year and look at how plastic waste is a global issue and not just one gyre off the coast of California.
Yeah, so years ago, the idea of these gyres and the garbage patches that are coming together, I remember hearing these tales, little stories would pop up. Oh, there's this garbage patch in the ocean. And nobody really believed it. And then some pictures started coming back, but still it's just kind of like this wives' tale about the oceans. What has really made the difference in understanding what's happening out in the oceans?
Well, it's the ultimate case of out of sight, out of mind. There are very few people that cross oceans and look down the water and see what's there. Now, I want to make sure that we understand that it's not really an island of trash. The idea of a patch gives you this idea of there being this massive conglomeration. The better analogy is a very thin soup. Imagine a handful of confetti over a football field of area. It's very small particles of a very wide space. And we're finding this is the case in all the world's oceans. And for example, in the Pacific Ocean, it isn't this Texas-sized garbage patch. It actually begins about 500 miles to the coast of California. It's this thin soup of plastic confetti all the way to 200 miles from Japan. So it's much, much bigger and a much more difficult problem to solve at sea.
There's an article that I found that has a bunch of pictures. It's on the Huffington Post, and I just was hoping I could bring some of these up for us to look at. And if you can describe a little bit about what's happening in these images and how you're doing it and what's going on out there.
Well, that photograph you're looking at right there, that's Anna and I and Captain Clive aboard a boat called the Sea Dragon. We're working with a group called Pangea Explorations that owns a Sea Dragon, and they called us up a year ago and says, we'll take you to the North Atlantic. Well, in that photograph, you're looking at us bringing up a sample, and I've got the sample right here to show you. What I have in my hand is a jar that's full of sargassum seaweed from the North Atlantic, and among the seaweed are small little microplastic particles, like confetti of plastic I talked about. We found the same thing in the North Atlantic as we have found in the North Pacific. So we have the same issue in all the world's gyres.
That's just amazing. And where is all this stuff coming from?
Well, it's interesting. You know, you tell people about it, and they assume that, okay, if it's plastic in the ocean, it's coming from people in the ocean, from boats and ships. But the truth is, most of it comes from land. It's as simple as a bottle cap washing down your street, down a storm drain, out to sea. So much of the plastic that's in the gyres is washing down our coastal watersheds. Think about it. The ocean is downhill from everywhere. Whether you live on top of Mount Everest or the Sahara Sands, you're on a watershed, and your land, by gravity, is flowing out to the sea. And we've seen the seas becoming these accumulation zones. These five gyres are where all this trash is collecting.
Now, I'm just looking at these images of the trash and what's out there. Let me get back to this image so you can take a look at it. How is this typical of the trash that you see out there?
Well, in that photograph you're looking at now, that was our last trawl, Trawl 35, within 300 miles of the Azores. We did 35 trawls, and every one was full of that plastic confetti. Now, in that photograph you're showing right there, you can see lots of fish mixed with a plastic confetti. Those fish are called mctovich or lantern fish. They come up at night from the depths up to the surface. So that picture's a nighttime trawl. We looked at inside the stomachs of fish like that from the Pacific, and we could not believe that a third of the fish on the ocean surface had plastics inside their stomachs. So what we've observed is that in the Pacific Ocean, fish are eating plastic. In the Atlantic Ocean, we're not sure yet, but we're going to find out soon. We just began opening up the stomachs of fish we caught looking for ingested particles of plastic.
Wow. When you look at the garbage patch, is it? Here's this image, and it's kind of this reddish-looking water with particulate matter in it. Is there, you say it's not like a solid mass. Is there... is there something that pulls it apart from maybe like a plankton bloom or a patch of seaweed or, you know, what makes it different characteristically?
Well, what you're looking at there in that picture is a mat of sargassum seaweed. And sargassum is just a natural part of the Sargasso Sea, which exists within the North Atlantic gyre. So as we were crossing the Atlantic Ocean, we come across these giant mats of sargassum. And here's that same sample I showed earlier of the North Atlantic. And you can see it's full of that sargassum seaweed with lots of small particles of plastic. And we were also collecting fish with this sample, and we're now looking at those to see if there's plastic inside their guts. You asked about these plankton blooms mm-hmm. and other natural debris out there and how that might compare to the plastic. It's interesting. Plastic kind of traces the patterns of natural debris. You see, I'd say 100 years ago, the only kind of debris you might find in the oceans would be logs, coconuts, seeds, maybe pumice stones, that volcanic ash that floats. That's the kind of natural debris that you would find 100 years ago. Well, today, by and large, more than half the debris that's found in the oceans is reported to be plastic. We have, in a very short time, created this monster of debris, of trash, going downhill, floating out in the world's oceans.
It's just hard to believe that we've created so much debris.
In a very short time. Yeah. If you look at the history of plastics, prior to World War II, you really wouldn't see any plastic in our households. All you might see perhaps a pair of pantyhose. That was the first kind of mass consumption of synthetic material. But during World War II, there was lots of research development for new synthetic materials, new kinds of fuels and lubricants. Then post-World War II, the 1950s, I mean, every American wanted a new car, refrigerator, a hula hoop, and the plastic age kind of grew like crazy. But it's just in the last 20 years, we've seen this explosion in plastic consumption, and it's mostly single-use disposable products. Like when I was a kid, you wouldn't see plastic water bottles, plastic bags. It's just lately, last couple of decades, that we've seen this explosion, and it's global. I mean, you consider the plastics industry has 6.5 billion customers worldwide that are using plastic bags and bottles. It's widespread across the globe, and it really is rapidly filling our oceans.
Yeah, and it's not just water bottles. It's all sorts of products. I'm seeing so many things now, these single-use items where it's you buy little packs of pre-sliced apples in a little plastic bag, or you buy something for your to wash your floor, or single-use. You wouldn't want to use, you know, an old rag. Why don't you use this single-use item that's been created, and then you can throw it away? And I mean, there seems to be a... this propensity for consumerism, for pushing these products on people. I don't know if people...
Yes.
It's like people don't know they need them until they see them. It's this really interesting reaction.
Well, there was a phrase you just used, throw away, that we like to have this convenience to throw things away. And I always ask students, I give a lot of school talks around California. I always ask kids, in the throwaway society... where is away? Where is all this stuff going that we consume? Where does all this convenient single-use material go? Well, it's interesting. Here in California, the California Integrated Waste Management Board looked at all that 120 billion pounds of plastic that we use in the United States. We found that half of that is destined for a landfill. We're going to bury that waste for other generations to deal with. About 20% becomes durable goods like computers and car bumpers and so forth. Only 5% gets recycled. It's really a joke how we've been fed this myth that plastics are efficiently and conveniently recycled, and the truth is it just doesn't happen. But that still leaves 25% of the plastic we make that's unaccounted for. But if you walk the beaches in countries around the world or sail across the ocean, and Roz, she's told me she's seen the same thing, you're seeing plastics in very remote places washing up on shores and floating out to sea.
Yeah. I'm just wondering right now, if I was hearing some noise on the line. Is Roz, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Yay!
You were great flow. I didn't want to interrupt, but I was about to, actually. Hi, how are you doing? I'm sorry about last week, by the way.
Oh, no problem. It's so wonderful to hear your voice and to make contact with you. I'm so excited. So tell
us. Absolutely. We actually seem to have a pretty good signal at the moment.
Yeah, we have a very good signal at the moment, and this is great. So where are you? How are things going? And, you know, let's keep this conversation going.
Where am I? I'm about 250 or so miles west of where I set off, which sounds like pretty good progress, except that I wanted to be going south. So I've been making good mileage. That's the good news, but the bad news is it's been in the wrong direction. I've been trying to get south, but there's quite a strong current. I think it must be because the wind is negligible at the moment, but there seems to be quite a strong current pushing me westwards. So I'm going with the flow and, making potential backup plans for Papua New Guinea if Australia proves to be impossible.
It's always good to have a backup plan. I can imagine that. Yeah, you were talking before you left even that being able to make it south because of currents would be a problem. So you're finding that right off the bat it really is.
That's right. Although, in fact, I thought the first half of the journey, if weather patterns were following typical yearly averages, the first half was supposed to be easier, and this was my opportunity to get south. It was going to be the second half that was going to push me northwards again and be more challenging. So if I'm even finding it difficult in this first half, then I would say that, oh, you know, I don't want to be defeatist or anything, but I'm just saying, I hear Papua New Guinea is lovely at this time of year.
So how's your boat? Oh, go ahead.
How's the boat? The boat's doing just great. The water maker is humming away at the moment, which is always reassuring because, as you know, I've got rather a checkered history with water makers. This one has failed 2 out of the last 3 big crossings. And I was especially nervous this time because I was the only person available to do the necessary maintenance on it. But to my enormous relief, it's working beautifully right now. And everything else seems to be working pretty well too. So no dramas yet. But there again, this is only day 5.
Yeah. How is it going with you? I mean, looking at your blog and checking your website, a little tough getting into the flow of things? Is the initial stage really hard?
Yeah. I was quite queasy and off my food for the first 2 or 3 days, which is extremely unlike me. But it wasn't entirely surprising because there is a bit of a swell out here. And this boat moves around a lot in even the slightest little swell. So I wasn't actually being seasick, but I was just a little bit green around the gills. But luckily that seems to have passed and my appetite has made it a full recovery. So, yeah, just kind of getting back into the groove of it now and going, oh, yeah, now I remember what this ocean existence is like. I suppose it's a bit like maybe a parallel would be driving on the left-hand side of the road and driving on the right-hand side. You make the transition backwards and forwards enough times, and it becomes easier and easier to switch between the two. And although my ocean existence is so utterly, utterly different from my land-based existence, I've made this transition. This is the 5th time that I've been out to sea now, if you count the aborted attempt in 2007. So I suppose that each time I find the transition a little bit easier than I did the time before. So, yeah.
Marcus, did you have anything that you wanted to ask? Marcus, did you have anything you wanted to ask or say to Roz?
I know
you got to hang out with her shortly before she left. So
Yes, I did. Roz, it's so good to hear your voice. You sound as optimistic as always.
Great to hear your voice too. And actually, I do have a plastic sighting to report, I'm sad to say.
I was going to ask you that question. So what did you see?
I wasn't able to get over to it. I tried to get it on video, but I don't know if I managed to capture it, and it was upwind of me by the time I saw it. It was a fairly large plastic bottle. I suppose it would be something like a 1 gallon bottle. And it was just floating on the surface. This was a couple of days ago. I didn't actually think I would see that much plastic out here because apart from Kiribati, there just isn't anything else near here. But, of course, plastic can travel enormous distances. So I'm sorry I'm not a COVID scientist. I was almost tempted to jump in the ocean and swim over to it to see if I could get a better look.
Stay close to your boat. Don't jump in unless you really have to.
I'd have been a little bit too scared to go that far away from my boat, especially if my boat seems to be drifting faster than the plastic bottle. So I'm afraid that self-preservation won out over scientific interest.
Well, that's okay. Just leave the bottle there. But it's interesting that you actually saw plastic out there. You know, I looked at some of the maps where we predict the trash accumulates, and I wouldn't expect to find any where you are. But the fact that you've seen some there just goes to show that wherever you go in the oceans today, you are finding the human footprint. In your case, you found one bottle drifting by your boat just recently.
Yeah, it was a bit sad that until this morning when I saw 3 Mahi Mahi, that one plastic slicing was actually the only object that I had seen of anything other than sea and sky since I left dry land 5 days ago. So, it's a bit sad that the plastic got there before the wildlife.
Yes. It sounds like you're making good progress. So you said 250 miles, you're west where you started. Not where you anticipate to be.
It's not the direction I wanted to be going in, but it's all good. I sort of hoped that they told me in Kiribati that the president and his family, the island that they come from, they are renowned for having a little bit of, should we just say, a bit of influence with the weather gods. So I rather hoped that President Anoti Tom had put in a good word for me. maybe he has. I mean, the weather has been very gentle so far, apart from extremely hot. But it hasn't been the torrential non-stop rain that I'd expected, because that's what we were getting in Kiribati. I've never seen rain quite like it. So I suppose I shouldn't complain. You know, I'm still here and still safe and heading somewhere, even if it's not quite where I had in mind.
Well, you've got lots of good vibes coming from here. We had a wonderful time just seeing you before you left on your third leg. Anna says hello, her family as well. It was so wonderful to have you here and tell us all about what inspired these expeditions that you've been on in your campaign to see a sustainable world. So I was honored, and Anna as well and her family, to see you off to the airport just a little more than a week ago.
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear that clearly, but I know you were talking about our event / Bon Voyage party just before I left. Did you say something about photographs?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that, Roz. I'm sorry.
I'm having the same problem. I can't hear you quite clearly either.
So what if you can hear me at all, what Marcus was saying is that he was very honored to be able to, and Anna were very honored to be able to see you off and to be able to spend those last minutes with you.
Marcus and Anna were so kind to me. We had this really fun party at Anna's parents' house in Santa Monica just before I left, and Marcus and Anna did a presentation about plastic pollution, and then they showed the video of when Marcus and I met when he was on the junk craft and I was on my rowboat, and we were a few hundred miles east of Hawaii. So he showed the video of our first encounter, and then I stood up and said a few words about what I'm doing and why, and it was just a really lovely way to spend my last night in the US before embarking. In fact, I've done pretty well for send-off, because I had a beautiful send-off in Kiribati as well. We had to do it at 6:45 in the morning because Parliament is in session at the moment. So if the President was going to come and see me off, which he really wanted to do, then it had to be super early. But in fact, that worked out well with the timing of the tides as well. So the young trainees at the Marine Training Center there were singing songs, and bills were strewing flowers on the water, and we had a camera crew there, and it was really beautiful. Speeches were made. It was a very lovely send-off. And, it's left me with very fond memories of Kiribati.
Well, you've inspired plenty of people here. I mean, they heard your story. I think what people walked away with was that everyone can really make a difference by starting small, with small efforts, can have a huge impact on the world. And it makes me think of your message that I've heard you say several times, that you cross these oceans just one oar stroke at a time. And it's very fitting here on Earth Day that people think about what they can do to change the world. And well, you're an example of one person making a huge contribution. So what sort of advice would you give us that we can do this Earth Day to support you and make a difference, of course?
Yeah, I feel that's so true. In fact, when you were saying that it's amazing how much plastic there is out here, I actually find it almost amazing that there isn't more, given that I think the figures are something like 150 billion plastic bags, I believe, in the US alone each year. So the average number per capita is huge. So if just each person that gives up using plastic bags, and preferably plastic cups and plastic water bottles as well, it really does make a big difference. And that's partly the premise behind the Eco Heroes initiative that we're launching this year, which just launched at the same time as I did, actually, 5 days ago. We're asking people to do at least one green deed every day. And it's not saying that one green deed is going to save the world, but it's just that general awareness, that consciousness that it all adds up. And also to connect people into a community of other eco-heroes all doing their bit. And when you start multiplying up the good stuff rather than just the bad stuff, it really does make a difference.
It absolutely does. I feel like there's this there's this movement afoot. Like more and more people are finding that they can make small statements. They can make small movements forward, and that there seem to be more and more people who are trying to do something.
I think it's one of those things that once you get it, once you start sort of running the sums and realizing that if we carry on as we are, day to day and person by person, then we're going to end up with a pretty appalling kind of planet to live on. It's just not going to be nice. And more than that, it's going to be unhealthy. It's actually going to be life-threatening. So I think once you kind of get that clarity, once people really click on that, then they can't help but behave in an environmentally conscious way. I was really pleased the other day. I got this lovely email from somebody who wrote just totally out of the blue, saying that some of my words had suddenly come back to him unexpectedly. And it was about this, the 1 million oar strokes it takes me to row across an ocean and how every action counts. And it suddenly just gelled for him. It just made sense. So he immediately went out and bought his reusable grocery bags. And he was on a pretty serious plastic bag habit from the sounds of it. But he is now off that. And there were a couple of other things that he's doing as well. And I was just so excited that he was so excited that he'd suddenly got it. Suddenly it all made sense. He's like, oh, my God, we can't carry on like this. And yes. I was so happy that he shared it with me.
I like how you say that we really can't carry on like this in today's world. And I think that's what makes things different now from the environmental movement, let's say in the 1960s and 70s, when it seemed more like a fad, a new idea that was very left-thinking. But today, I think people will see, once you get it, like you say, once you realize we can't carry on, I think people see the necessity of change. They see that now this environmental movement, it's a necessity. If we don't turn around and understand we can carry on, we are going to experience dire consequences in the not too distant future. So I like the way that you make the point that once you realize that, you make that switch, most people I meet, they can't turn back once they realize that we have to change.
Absolutely. And I think we're also making that transition from, well, I hope that we are. The environment used to be an issue. It used to be a problem. Now we're going, oh, hang on, this is our home that we're talking about here. The environment is not just something that happens over there. It's our world. It's where we have to live and breathe and eat and drink. And if we put, I'm trying to think of a nice word, rubbish out into that, then the rubbish is going to come back to us. So I hope that that concept is also going to catch on, that we can't separate our lives and our health and our happiness from the environment, that the two are completely intertwined.
Yeah, I like the I like thinking that the movement has changed, like Marcus said, from the 1970s and 1960s. You know, there were some things that were done at that time. Earth Day started in 1970. And we're now looking 40 years on, you know, it had some setbacks and, you know, people pulled away from the eco movement. And now it's moving forward again. People are starting to see what's happening. Do you think there's anything specific in the recent years that has helped to make the difference?
That's a really interesting question. The first thing that jumps to mind is something that an American friend of mine said to me one time last year. She's a baby boomer generation, and she commented that her generation is just getting absolutely slammed, that was her word, by cancer. And I think that's still a very, very influential generation, and I wonder if they're starting, you know, they tend to be the captains of industry and influential in government. I wonder if they're seeing this increase in sickness and making the connections there. That's the first thing that leaped into my mind. I don't know, Marcus, do you have any ideas on that?
That makes a lot of sense. I think today that we're beginning to recognize connections between our actions and impact on the biosphere and other people. If you look in the last 50 years especially, all the synthetic chemicals that we've invented, well over 30,000 new chemicals, and we unleash these on the world, unleash them onto a global community without really understanding the long-term implications, how these chemicals, they interact with each other, the developmental impacts. That's why we're seeing rises in cancer, diabetes, all these health effects. I think we begin to see the link between that and our exploitation of the natural world and allowing our industrialized society to unleash its material onto the world as waste. I think those connections are being made. And that's where I think, as a global community, we're communicating and making those changes happen.
Yeah, and somebody in the chat room here is saying that the internet is a huge influence as well. The fact that people are able to communicate so much more rapidly and easily. The efficiency of the internet, the fact that we're talking to Roz right now over a satellite phone. I'm talking to you, Marcus, through a Skype connection, and we're streaming live to an audience of, you know, several hundred people, almost 500 people. So, and that's just in just here in the chat room. I'm sure there are more people watching, and then this show will go out even further as a result of podcasting. So, the internet itself is making just a huge, huge influence. The fact that pictures can be of giant garbage piles or pictures of what plastics are seen in the ocean or pictures of Roz on her boat or Marcus on your raft. These things are out there.
Yes, and I also think that this increases communication. Oh, go ahead, Roz.
I was just going to say, that's a really good point. The trouble is the technology is a double-edged sword because there is no, at the moment in the US, there's no censorship on what goes on the internet. So it's possible for disinformation to be spread that way as well. But let's focus on the positive side of it. Yes, it is a fantastic tool for getting these important messages out there. And although there is, I think, some attempt to cast doubt on certain aspects of environmental issues, I think that it's almost like, I don't know, battle of good and evil. Anyway, sorry, I'm going off on one. I'll hand over to Marcus at this point. What are you going to say, Marcus?
Well, I was just thinking that you mentioned the distribution of misinformation. Because we are a globalized community that's communicating, it's very quick for information to become popular and go out there, and it might not be true. A good example is the idea of a Texas-sized garbage patch. I've been battling for the last few years this conception that there's this island of trash that's 10, 20, 30 meters thick, and all we have to do is go out there and get it. And I get these fanciful ideas on the solution being to go out there with big ships and big rafts and go get this plastic and mine it to burn it to make energy and all these crazy ideas. But the truth, the science, it's much more difficult. It's a much, much larger problem than this island. As you know, you don't see much when you just look across the ocean. When you drag a net, you find this soup of small plastic particles that's from coast to coast. I imagine right now if you were to drag a net behind your boat, you might see a few little microplastic particles. So the reality is a little more deceitful than this myth. So it's difficult to bust myths sometimes.
I think that's partly a question. It's interesting that one about people wanting to go out there and fix the problem. I think that's quite an interesting psychological issue there, that we don't want to face the fact that we might have really broken something in a way that can't be easily fixed. You know, human beings are great problem solvers. When we see a problem, we want to fix it. And it's hard for us to accept that maybe there's a problem, even worse, a problem of our own making, that there is no simple solution to.
I think we like the technological fix, but many of these changes require a cultural fix, and that's much more difficult and inconvenient to implement. Like, it's easier to reinvent a way of going out there and getting this plastic out of the ocean. It's very much a fanciful idea, but the best solutions, I'm convinced, are all upstream. It requires changing production, changing the kinds of products we manufacture, and changing our day-to-day behaviors in ways that aren't really cheap or convenient, that it takes some effort to do the right thing.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, Roz, do you have any, I know you had like a net last year, you were collecting plastic from the ocean. Are you doing something similar this year? Are you sampling? And have you found, I mean, you saw a plastic jug out there today, but have you found this evidence of this plastics everywhere the same way that Marcus has?
I'm afraid I wasn't actually doing a plastic net. I might well have confused the issue by showing the tool from Marcus's net when we met near Hawaii. I haven't actually wanted to slow my boat down any more than absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
And even a small net would make a bit of a difference. So I'll be going just on what I managed to observe from the surface. And I am keeping an eye out. I'm keeping an eye out anyway, because I have to admit, after just 5 days of nothing but sea and sky, I'm a little bit over it now. I'm craving to see something out of the ordinary. And although I don't really want to see plastic out here, if there's any valuable evidence that I can bring back, then I will do, whether it's photographs or whether it's the objects themselves. So I am certainly keeping my eyes open, always looking for just anything of interest. I haven't even seen an aeroplane since I set out. So it's been quiet.
Yeah. Speaking of the quiet, how are you? How are you keeping yourself busy? How are the audiobooks going so far? What are you listening to?
The audiobooks are going great. I love Audible. I'm on my fourth book now, I think. Yeah, four books in 4 days.
Wow.
And there have been some really good ones so far. Jacqueline Winspear was very good. In fact, something that I loved about that book was it was set in 1930 in Britain. And I loved it that all their food, when they go to the grocery store, came wrapped in greaseproof paper and brown paper bags. And their lunches were in a wicker basket. And it's like, so that's how we managed before we had plastic. It's perfectly possible to manage without plastic in so many applications. And it was just really nice to sort of hark back to that earlier pre-plastic age and see how we managed. And I'm not saying that we would want to... I mean, there are definitely some good uses for plastic, but it would be good if we reserved plastic for those things that just can't be done by anything else. I have to give a quick shout out here to Ian Tuller, who does so much wonderful work on my boat. And although he refused to come to Tarawa this time around because he got some horrible stomach bug there the last time, he's packaged up loads of stuff that I needed for the boat. And all the packaging he'd done was greaseproof paper bags and brown paper bags. And it was so nice to see that. So there are so many other viable options.
You know, it's interesting, Roz, is that all of the ways of doing things a few decades ago, using paper to wrap things, for example, that's all still done today in different contexts. For example, we use glass to contain beer and wines. I can't imagine using a plastic bottle for a full bottle of wine. Our culture would not accept that. For example, paper. You go to any meat market and you'll get your meat wrapped in paper. So the solutions are out there. Aluminum cans for sodas. Why not aluminum cans for water? And so using water bottles or a paper carton like we use for milk, use that for water. So solutions, they're all around us still today. The ones that are in the past, they're still around in different contexts. We've just gotten to this habit of using plastic. And I believe we can easily go back to those solutions that worked just fine a few decades ago.
Yeah, and then we won't have to worry so much, won't have to have the same reliance on the plastics. We won't have to have the reliance on those single-use items. You know, it's simple steps, as you said, step by step, oar stroke by oar stroke, change from the plastic bottle to, a stainless steel coffee mug or whatever it happens to be for you.
Marcus, I'm kind of wishing that you mentioned beer and wine now. I'm suddenly getting a bit of a craving for ice-cold beer. It's not that I really want the beer. I just want an ice-cold anything. It's so hot out here.
How hot is it?
We'll try to have an ice-cold six-pack waiting for you when you land.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to that.
We'll all keep that bet for you. Make sure that there's a good homecoming when you land as well. We've been going for about a half hour here, and I was just, we don't want to keep you from rowing for too long, Roz. I know it's the middle of the day and probably pretty good rowing time for you to be making some progress.
It is, and in fact, while I'm talking, I'm drifting north again, so I probably should get back to the oars, but it's been great talking with you both. Great to hear your voice, Marcus, and I look forward to a welcome back party in Santa Monica when I'm back on terra firma.
Glad to hear you're doing well. You sound wonderful. Best of luck, Roz. We'll keep following you, and we're all going to be eco-heroes like you, and I think we can go to your website, become eco-heroes. Is that right? We can sign up for the program?
Oh, yep, good call. Ecoheroes.me, M-E,
okay,
is the website. And very cute website by the same guy who did your Five Gyres website, Brennan Novak. And, hopefully, I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I'm hoping that we've got lots of eco-heroes logging their green deeds, and if not, they should be.
That's right.
All right.
We can pass the word along and try and get as many people as possible to be their own eco hero. And
absolutely.
It's eco heroes.
We need more eco heroes.
Got it. Thank you so much, Roz. It's been really, really wonderful. I'm so glad that you're doing well. This is such a special opportunity to get to speak with you while you're out rowing, and I feel lucky to be taking this adventure with you. So I look forward to talking with you next week. I'm so excited.
Me too. Thank you very much, Dr. Kiki. I will see you same time, same place. Well, I'll be in a different place. You'll be in the same place.
That's right.
Next week. I'll speak to you then.
All right. Speak to you next week. Take care.
Take care, Roz.
Bye.
Keep
I
rowing.
I will. Goodbye.
Bye, Roz.
Bye.
It's just amazing. I love what technology is allowing us to do, and the ability to be able to talk with Roz is just wonderful. And thank you, Marcus, for joining in the conversation. It's great to have you here.
This was quite a treat. Thank you for the chance to hear Roz's voice. My wife Anna, we both had this party we hosted for her on her departure. She really inspired so many people by her story and the challenges that she's putting herself up to. She's an amazing human being, and I look forward to seeing her arrival in Australia.
Oh, we all do, definitely. And with your project at fivegyres.org, the website is the number 5 gyres, gyres.org, for people
yes.
in the audience who are interested in finding out more about it. And is there anything, I know it's late in the day, but this is Earth Day and you've had a busy day. Is there anything more? Are you keeping busy doing more earthy stuff
today?
Very,
very busy. We're actually planning our next expedition coming up in a few months across the South Atlantic. But I think on this Earth Day, just remember every day is Earth Day, and every little oar stroke, everything you do makes a huge difference. You can end your plastic habit today by just investing in some reusable bags or bottles and make the difference starting now.
And I think that's a great message to close the show out on. And once again, thank you so much. I do appreciate your taking your time out of your busy day to be able to join us and be able to speak with Roz. And hopefully we'll be able to get you and your wife, Anna, on the show again later through the journey to be able to touch base with her once again. I think that would be a really, really wonderful thing for you to be able to touch back in again.
That'd be great. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Have a great day. And it is Earth Day. That was Roz rowing the Atlantic, Marcus Erickson from 5gyres.org, to talk a bit about the problem with plastics and our overuse of plastics, our reliance on plastics that really isn't quite necessary. There are many other ways to do things. We've just gotten used to doing things in the easy, easy way. And on that note, I'd just like to finish this all out by saying, letting you know that you can follow Roz at her website, rozsavage.com. You can follow along with her journey. She tweets also at Roz Savage, R-O-Z-S-A-V-A-G-E. And she's a prolific tweeter out there from the South Pacific Ocean. What else do we have that you should be able to check into next week? Next week, we're talking about Pacific weather systems with Lee Bruce, who is Roz's weather guy. So hopefully he'll let us know what Roz is going to be up for, what we can predict based on average weather systems for the Pacific Ocean. And if you would like to download past episodes of Roz Rose, you can go to twit.tv/Roz, R-O-Z, and you'll find lots of episodes there. This is episode 62, so there's 61 other episodes that you can check out from the past 2 years. I'm Dr. Kiki, and I'll be back here at 5 p.m. Pacific time next week with more Roz Rose. In the meantime, keep rowing.